From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Major pushback continued on Tuesday by both Democrats in both houses of Congress and the news media over President Trump's decision to pull U.S. troops out of Syria. Since those troops are not there with the permission of either the Syrian government or the UN Security Council, they are in Syria illegally under international law. Nevertheless, the attacks on Trump continued throughout Tuesday across the news media from left to right. For more on that, we spoke with Professor Tony Montero via Skype from Philadelphia on Tuesday. Well, Tony, I guess we could start with President Trump had promised to end the endless wars. Back when he ran in 2015, he first uttered that particular heresy, and that started a controversy and storm that, along with the questioning the utility of NATO at that point. And just about every time that he has, you know, tacked in this direction, the media go crazy on him. Whatever weapons they have, you know, knives they have sharpened or whatever at the moment, this is now these impeachment hearings, you know, they get sharper, they start swinging them more wildly and stuff. And we're looking at a situation now where even though McConnell has been defending Trump in the impeachment track, he does not like Trump tacking towards peace in Syria either. There's almost no constituency for peace anywhere. They're not treating it as something desirable on Democracy Now! Either, for example. There's no channel that says, wow, President Trump wants to pull out of Syria. It's about time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, what we're seeing, and it's being crystallized daily, is a real separation of a good part of the American public from the political, journalistic, and neoconservative forces. Mm. This is huge. I mean, Trump makes a move. He made it, or he first announced it last December, that he was pulling all the troops out of Syria. Now, from my understanding, only 1,000 were actually pulled out, and the fact that more were not, the whole thing was not pulled out, had to do with the Pentagon and the generals obstructing his executive order. But now he announces it again. And it has huge consequences because this time, unlike last December, it's connected to a phone call conversation with the president of Turkey, Erdogan, who is a nominal member of NATO, but in fact is moving away from NATO almost in a way that Trump is questioning the viability or the necessity of NATO. Now, of course, Turkey, in moving away from NATO, is moving closer to Russia. And even though the press is talking about the U.S. forces and the Kurds have defeated ISIS, the real deal is that the Syrian and Russian forces defeated ISIS and the other terrorist anti-Assad, anti-Syria forces early as 2016, 2017. This had already occurred. And so you have what they're calling ISIS isolated in this no man's desert area in western Iraq and eastern Syria. And you have these Kurdish forces, which are not just Kurdish. This is a coalition called the Syrian Democratic Forces, who are both anti-Trump Arabs and Kurds, who claim to be there to watch over these ISIS forces that had been captured. In fact, it is a part of the Pentagon and the neocons' policy of keeping a military force on the borders of Turkey to pressure Erdogan and the Turkey government not to go too far in its military and economic alliance with Russia, and some would even say Iran. And of course, what I see in the not that distant future is a rapprochement between Turkey and Syria, Erdogan and Assad. This is what has the so-called liberals, the so-called people protecting our security, and most of the Pentagon, most of the State Department, most of the state really upset, is the breakup of NATO from its Eastern Front and this new alliance of Russia, Syria, Turkey, and Iran in the heart of what is called the Middle East.
You know, and you've got, like this, the neocon position is now the official position of the Democrats, the exclusive position, and there's diversity among the Republicans on that, which is kind of a flip with a couple of exceptions like Ron Paul from where we were, say, 10, 15 years ago. Certainly like when Obama came into office, for example, 8 years ago.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are you saying that the Democrats were not completely a part of the neocon agenda in 2012 or 2008?
No, I'm going back further. But you know, you had at the time Dennis Kucinich, Cynthia McKinney, Barbara Lee at that time, you know, a few others. There was at least a diversity of opinions, and although when it came to a vote, you could see that the Congress itself was an instrument of neocon foreign policy. But now, you know, they got rid of McKinney and Kucinich, of course. The others have been cowed. Barbara Lee, if you look at her Twitter, actually is saying, on the one hand, it's past time to get out of Afghanistan. She didn't say anything when Trump was talking about that a couple weeks ago. She didn't call a press conference and stand next to him, for example. Like, if you wanted to do that, you might try to do. there's nothing about this announcement about Syria, other than in a general term, her complaining that Trump is systematically dismantling President Obama's legacy, which the war in Syria is certainly a key part of his legacy, since it's his creature.
Yeah. On foreign policy, the Democrats, almost to a person, is a party of cowards and war makers. They want to act as though they're liberal on domestic policy and at the same time be hawks on foreign policy. You can't do the two things. It's like riding two horses in opposite directions.
Right.
You can't be for war in the Middle East and regime change, which most of them are for, and at the same time say you're going to fund Social Security, you're going to redo the medical system so it's Medicare for all, and you're going to do the infrastructure. You cannot do both.
Right.
Trump is absolutely right. This military empire is too expensive.
Yep.
As long as it exists, the American people will be immiserated and impoverished, and the infrastructure will crumble and the country will go to hell. He's absolutely right about that. The very fact that his base remains with him is not because he's so charismatic, quote unquote.
Right.
It is because they don't want war. I think an end to endless war is the majority position among the American masses, especially among working people. The hawk, the militarists, the war makers are among the elites. And sadly, the party of Franklin Roosevelt is the party of war and endless war. And I hope that they go down to ignominious defeat because of their duplicity, because of their hypocrisy, because of their moral bad faith in the face of the fact that ordinary people say we cannot afford this any longer. We need an end to war, and we need not a negative peace, which I consider Trump's approach, but a positive peace, a peace with justice.
You know, there's this huge opportunity because of the configuration of opinion on the ground to actually accomplish this. You've had for, since the post-war period, really, a part of the population, larger or smaller, but always sizable, mobilized in favor of the military-industrial complex, basically, because they were concerned about the imagined or real threats that were presented and, you know, willing to go along to protect it. And the system was able to accommodate them for some reason at that time. They were looking at, or portions of the population were looking at, I think that's a more accurate way of putting it, you know, ever expanding horizons for their economic well-being. That day has ended for all but a handful of people now. The vast majority of humanity is not in that boat.
Listen, Don, let's look at it. There are still people alive who fought in the Korean War. Yep. That was a defeat, a debacle. There are thousands, tens of thousands of veterans who fought in Vietnam and came back to this country embittered because they were lied to. They were used in an unjust war. There are tens of thousands, even more thousands, let us say, of veterans who fought in Iraq, Afghanistan, were deployed in various ways in Libya and certainly in Syria, and thousands who are now deployed throughout Africa, who are saying, for what? What is this for? What is the objective? And that memory, let me put it that way, this political memory is deeper than the polls can detect, than most, when I say polls, the opinion polls,
right,
and most politicians are able to understand. There is something deep happening. And I put quotes around this, an anti-war sentiment, let us say, at this point, not a positive peace sentiment. That will take some time, a lot of political education, but it is a negative peace sentiment. We don't want war because these are useless wars and they're too expensive. This military deployment all over the world is too expensive. Therefore, there is no significant mass pushback when Trump meets with, speaks highly of Kim Jong-un of North Korea, of a nation and a leadership that has been demonized for over 60 years, going on 70 years by the United States government.
Yep.
Suddenly Trump makes this change and the masses in many ways welcome it because they don't want war.
Right.
And that's key.
Yeah. Who would have ever guessed that no matter how much stirring was done around Korea, that the most hostile act to Trump's moves towards peace there would be for people to yawn outside of the leadership of the so-called left, who
That's
say
right.
either, well, he's lying, don't be fooled, he wants to attack China, or they'll say that, listen, he's doing this because he has to. You know, capitalism is going to collapse, and he thinks he can save capitalism by doing this. And he's wrong. But their answer is to do nothing and not try to hasten that process, and rather, you know, what they're saying in essence is, so oppose them trying to do this so that capitalism can fall the way we say it should fall, instead of falling in peace. You know, I don't get what direction they want to take. You know, this is the so-called leadership of the left. What direction they want to take the people in when you have an opening like the president of the United States on the one hand saying, I want to pull out of this war and that war, and everybody else aligning against him at the very same moment. If nothing else, right now he needs public support, a massive display of public support to show the Democrats that they're doing the wrong thing with impeachment. If mm-hmm. people were saying Trump's my guy because he wants to pull out of Turkey, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't do that. For some reason,
wants to pull
that's
out
not
of Syria,
possible. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Turkey, Syria, the whole bit.
Yeah, it's very clear. And the Pentagon, the CIA, the other intelligence services, and the deep state, and he named it right, yeah. the secretive state,
yep.
The undemocratic authoritarian institutions that run most of what goes on in this country.
Yeah, we used to call it the permanent government, remember, back in the 70s, 80s.
Yeah, permanent government. It's very clear that he is clashing with them in a way that we've never seen.
Right.
Not even Lincoln, in the battles with his generals during the Civil War, came anything close right. to this type of right. attack and conflict of a sitting president with the state, with the Pentagon, with the intelligence services. And of course, that gets us to impeachment. It is now clear that the White House has been riddled with, since the day of his inauguration, has been riddled with CIA agents who are hostile towards him. This Ukraine gate is a demonstration of the role of the CIA in trying to bring him down. You know, the whole Comey Russiagate thing, the Mueller report, that seemed to be largely in the hands of the FBI, Comey, McCabe, and some others. But now, with this new round of impeachment rumblings, this is the CIA taking control, by the way, of domestic politics. Remember, the CIA, at least the way I understand it, was only supposed to be involved in foreign issues, not domestic politics. Mm. So what does it mean when you have CIA agents now calling themselves whistleblowers who are involved in domestic politics?
They're the ones that were supposed to be blowing whistles on, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. So, you know, Don, it's so interesting. Everything is the opposite of what we're being told in the mainstream media. Everything is the opposite. So if they say it's up, you can be assured that it's down. If they say it's black, you know it's white. If they say Trump is destroying the security of the United States, take it to be the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you know, you mentioned this, the timing of this. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at this article in the New York Times, which was on Tuesday's Times, news analysis from so-called by David Sanger.
Right.
When Get Out is the president's national security strategy. And he says basically that in opposition to Trump doing this and the way Trump is viewing the U.S. troops that are inside Syria right now illegally, it says, mm-hmm. to the Pentagon and the State Department, that's a traditional role for American troops honed over 75 years of global leadership. Well, that 75 years is only a few years shy of when the National Security Act was signed and created the CIA. And we're mm-hmm. talking about having created its predecessor just about 75 years ago.
Yeah. And what Sanger is saying in those sentences that you quoted, he is saying precisely what you and I have been saying for now close to 3 years, that in fact, this guy Trump is disrupting the post-war military, financial, economic
right.
Configuration
yep.
that guaranteed U.S. imperialist hegemony.
Exactly. Established, you know? And guaranteed it.
That's right. That's right. He is pulling the guts out of this thing as much as one president can do.
Right.
He is obviously a disruptor of a system which was set up purely for purposes of imperial aggression. Hence, and I think we can say it again, Trump represents, whether he can completely pull it off is a whole nother question, he represents imperial retreat. And from the Middle East and from Northeast Asia, this is not a small matter. In that sense, he does represent peace, albeit a negative peace. We, however, represent and will fight for a positive peace. However, we come together on one issue, the question of peace, the question of imperial retreat, the right. question of dismantling NATO, getting out of Afghanistan, getting out of Syria, right. you know, and pursuing, and I put quotes, American interests in ways other than armed conflict, regime change, and nation building.
Right. Right. I mean, when you're talking about American interests, let's talk about which element of American society
Absolutely.
Will those interests accrue to. Is it just
That's right.
shareholders and, you know, manufacturers of weapons and you know, other, you know, collateral businesses, the ones that do, you know, rent the troops and all of those guys? Or will it be the society? First of all, by the way, the global conditions that one creates for the United States to exist within certainly is a part of the consequence of foreign policy. And so if you're talking about this policy being good or bad for the people of the United States, the first thing is, does it make the world more or less peaceful and just? Because if you're upsetting that apple cart, everything else that you're doing is, you know, deck chair on the Titanic deck rearranging.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, you know, I keep mentioning negative peace, positive peace. You understand? Imperial retreat right. Engineered by, for example, Trump and those elements around him constitutes negative peace. Our system will collapse internally under the weight of the cost of war, future wars and past wars and military right. spending. We have to get out of that business. That's negative peace. We are talking about a positive peace, a positive program. And of course, from the standpoint of positive peace, it is vastly different from what Trump is talking about, because we are talking about peace and justice,
That's right.
peace and anti-poverty, peace and rising wages and infrastructure and health care for all and saving the environment. That's positive peace. Right. You're right. There is no real left in that sense, outside of small groups here and there. But there is. The so-called left, self-defined, have become the willing agents and allies of the deep state under the rubric that they are supporting liberals.
Yep. Yeah. This is supposedly, you know, the united front in opposition to the fascist rising. But
yeah, right.
it totally
right.
ignores all of the historical facts surrounding the last emergence of fascists and you know, the connections between the two. Ignore the fundamental facts. Again,
that's a,
for example, like Hitler not having won the election, but having lost the election and being appointed chancellor by power. Like Mussolini not being elected, but being appointed as the prime minister by Victor Emmanuel, etc. These things, you know, they were talking about how Trump was going to sneak his way into office on the back of white supremacist votes. And as a matter of fact, he didn't. He won the election by the rules, and which is not what happened in the case of any of these other fascists. You said back then, fascists don't run for office.
Not in the United States. No. They already have
They have
state
power already, right. Why would they do that? They have state power, and they're not putting that power up for election. What and goes on in the election has nothing to do with the power that's in the hands of fascists.
Except that you got a guy that ran against the deep state.
And won.
I mean, And won.
Yep.
You know, albeit an electoral victory.
Whatever.
But he won.
But
he won.
When he ran, when he ran, he had not a single, you know, major media outlet supporting that argument at all. That argument, to the extent that he wasn't being speared with it, was left out. You didn't hear Fox talk about that. Just when Fox wasn't saying string them up, they weren't saying, and by the way, let's get the deep state. They were saying, ah, listen, don't pay no attention to that. He's one of our guys. You know, and that was basically it. There was no place for the sentiment that existed in the population to be amplified by any institutions of power. And so they were all being used to suppress that message from germinating, and yet that's what carried the day.
Yeah, and this is so deep. You know, I find myself these days always going back to that period, 1914, the beginning of World War I, until approximately the death of Lenin, because that becomes this very, very critical moment in contemporary history, and we're still living it. What did Lenin come back to Russia with in his hand, the April thesis? An end to the war. Right. An end to the war. What led to the overthrow of the Kerensky government, the liberal government, the fact that they were trying to talk out of both sides of their mouth on war?
Right.
Lenin came with a positive program for peace, a peace program. If you are left, you have to have a peace program, and it has to be a positive peace program. That's why the Russian revolutionary said, peace, land, and bread. Very simple.
Yep.
Very simple. We don't have anything near that, but we have a lot of people in the language of identity politics and pronouns and other things, who are talking about what they oppose, but they do not have a positive peace plan. In that sense, none of them can be considered left. I think it is a joke to consider Elizabeth Warren left.
Right.
And certainly Joe Biden left. And, well, you know, I go further.
Right, right. I mean, he's not left of Trump by any means, for example.
Oh, of course not.
Okay.
And that's why, remember when we had the discussion, Don, when, you know, this is during the election where they were saying already that Trump was a fascist. And I asked you, and I guess it was a rhetorical question, if Trump is a fascist, then what is Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, right, right, right.
And wasn't, I still say that.
It wasn't a rhetorical question. Who, by the way, you know, she's floating to the top of the, I would say, cesspool, I guess, to the top of the pool.
Well, yeah, right.
You know, we're now looking at the possibility being floated in the media of Hillary Clinton against Mitt Romney. Next year, and I would add Hillary Clinton in her eyes with Michelle Obama as a vice presidential candidate, and then Mitt Romney, say, with Jeb Bush as a vice presidential candidate.
As a third party ticket.
No. Primary season. They're gonna go in there and get spanked. I guess they're testing the waters for that. But I think they need to climb out of the cesspool before they take a sample. certainly, if they're going to taste test it, I would suggest doing that. Although, you know, who knows? Listen, we're just about out of time. I just wanted to say that it appears that people who are supposed to understand the historical dynamic of capitalism, that the arc it rides leads downward towards the end because it requires the ever greater return on investment, in other words, to extract more and more value out of every component of the economy, and to be defended militarily, you know, harder and harder against the, you know, stronger and stronger resistance that's created by this condition. One would think that Trump talking about trying to solve that problem by cutting down the military would make people who consider themselves Marxists understand, great. We're about to go into the revolution, and they're disarming. Let's take that. And yet that's not the case. So we'll pick up that maybe at that point next time we talk.
Thanks a lot, Don. Always a pleasure.
The same, Tony. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.